You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemster. Welcome to the Art of Potential show. We have a super fun show in store for you today. We are going to be talking about getting published. And I know our community is so incredibly creative. We've got all kinds of people out there writing amazing things. And today we're going to be talking about how to take your writing and try to get it into the marketplace. And I have found for us a fantastic literary agent, Angela Rinaldi. Welcome, Angela.
Thanks, Kristen.
We are so glad to have you with us. And what I'd like to do before we start talking about the ins and outs of publishing is actually, I want to hear about you. Can you tell us about your career path and how you became a literary agent?
Okay, good question. I think everything that I've done has been a natural extension of my love of reading.
It helps, I'm sure.
I'm sorry?
It helps to love reading if this isn't
yet. I mean, as a young kid, I'm sure you've heard this a million times before, but you could always find me a book. I mean, family members thought I was antisocial because I'd always be off in the distance. You know, I'd say hello, have dinner with the family, and then I was off reading a book and reading well into the night. I started with a lot of my mother's books, which were very commercial women's fiction at the time.
Wow.
And then moved on to other things. And I went to college, St. John's University.
You went to a great book school?
Well, it was St. John's University in New York.
Okay.
And I was a French major and really not getting, you know, marks high enough to do anything with it. Moved to education, graduated, but I already had a summer job in a publishing company.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I loved it. I wanted to quit college and just go right there. And they said, no, graduate, get your degree, and we'll have something for you when you graduate. And they did. I started in a very low-level job, stuffing envelopes with a premium sales manager, and then I was assistant to the managing editor, and she unfortunately passed, and they gave me her job on a temporary basis, and then they gave me her job. So at 23, I was managing editor of a major publishing company, and then, you know, I just kind of moved up from there. And so I was at Bantam, I was at New American Library, I was at Pocket Books, and various positions as senior editor, managing editor, executive editor, but it was either in management, but always acquiring titles.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I left New York Publishing in 1983, I needed a bit of a break, and I'd always had a desire to be a caterer. I took a break from publishing and cooked, had my own little catering business. But then I got an invitation to speak at a writer's conference here in San Diego, and so I took it. I came out, and I had the opportunity to stay in Los Angeles, and I did, and I created a job for myself. No, seriously, at the Los Angeles Times, publishing books using material from the newspaper.
Oh, wow. Did you pitch them the job? I mean, how did you make that happen? I'm really curious, because I love this.
I was hired as the managing editor of the Los Angeles Times Syndicate.
Okay.
I don't know if you know anything about syndicates, but what they used to do, there aren't many anymore, if any, is sell columnists to papers all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I started out as managing editor of that, but then the Olympics had come to Los Angeles and they wanted to publish a book.
Okay.
So that's how it started. And then I created a position, a full-time position for myself, publishing books using material from the newspaper.
Oh, wow.
So I had a separate profit center within the paper.
That's fantastic.
And again, a natural extension of my early experience. And then in 1993 or so, I took the first buyout from the Los Angeles Times. And then the agency started maybe 2 years after that. The agency will be 20 years old.
Oh, wow.
This year, actually.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. And once again, the agency is a natural extension of my previous experience. So that's pretty much how I got started.
You know, Angela, you say that, and I agree. Everything's a natural extension of your previous experience, but you really do have quite an ability to create things for yourself. And I think that's something that you aren't mentioning nearly as much as you should, because, I mean, you're very proactive. I love hearing about, you know, you creating jobs and then, I mean, going out and starting a catering business, too. That takes a lot of chutzpah.
You know? Well, I guess I never really saw it as that. It was just what I did. You know, I needed to keep going, and it's always been one foot in front of the other for me. In fact, that's what I tell writers all the time. This is a process. You kind of have to stay in the game. And I think I was just following my own advice.
And I bet because of that, I can imagine that you're a great agent. What I'd like for you to do is just tell us a little bit about what a literary agent does. Can you describe, you know, what your typical day is like?
Well, the typical day, of course, starts as everybody else's does, reading emails. And
how many emails do you typically get in the morning, like, you know, your inbox?
Well, if you want to just say submissions, I probably get 20 to 30 email submissions a day.
Okay.
I don't take paper submissions anymore. I only want email submissions.
Right.
In fact, if people go to the website, they can see all of that. So I briefly go through, I kind of prioritize the emails as to what gets answered first.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually fires that have to be put out with clients and editors and things like that. And then I kind of go to some of my blogs and news sites and things like that. And then I'll be reading submissions, or I'll start reading submissions and put the ones aside that I know I want to continue with. And then, you know, some you can just move on very quickly from.
Right.
But what's really changed is that during the day, my phone never rings anymore. We do everything by email.
Oh, interesting.
Everything by email. Negotiation by email, offers are made by email. Editors usually respond very quickly to an email, whereas they don't with a phone call. So it's a day like that where I'm working on my own all day. And sometimes at the end of the day, I thought, you know, I haven't really talked to anyone except maybe I've gone to the bank or the post office
right.
or something. It's kind of just how it is now. Everything's email.
And I think a lot of people experience that you're talking to no one, but yet everyone at the same time.
It's a wide universe out there.
Yes.
But it's all online.
Right, right. So you're able to, and you know, emails are great, but sometimes a phone call is really nice just to, you can get a lot through intonation and things like that.
It does. I mean, look, if there's a, you know, a sensitive situation, that's going to be a phone conversation.
Right. So, okay, let's talk about sensitive situations, and you mentioned putting fires out. Can you give us kind of a global idea of what a typical fire might be or something that you suddenly have to say, uh-oh, emergency, 911, let me see what I can do here?
Right. Well, it might be a misunderstanding between an editor and an author.
Okay.
It might be a mistake on a royalty statement.
That would cause people to be upset.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it could be something that's happening with sales or the way something is being published. It could be a mistake on a cover. It could, you know, the realm is
vast.
There's a pretty wide expanse of what could go wrong.
So,
expectations aren't being met. The ebook doesn't come up in the right way. It wasn't, you know, the production values are not good. Could be anything. Editors are not responding to submission that's gone out. That kind of thing.
So actually, what we're going to do is take a break, because in the next segment, I want you to take us through what the process is and how it works so that I'm rather visual, so I want to kind of see it in my mind. So we're going to talk about that when we return. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show. This is Kristen Heemstra. I am speaking with literary agent Angela Rinaldi. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about how the process of getting a book published actually works. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and we are talking with literary agent Angela Rinaldi. So, Angela, we were just talking about your career path and about what it takes, you know, for people to approach you, or why, you know, what an agent does for people, the fires you put out, et cetera. One of the things I would like to know is just the step-by-step process. So let's say we've got authors out there. They want to get their book published. Take me through that process. What does it look like?
Well, I think the first thing is that it's very important that the author know what genre they're writing in.
Okay.
You'd be surprised the number of times I go to a conference and I sit down in front of someone and they don't know the genre they're writing in. You know, they can't, you know, I'll say, well, what genre is this? And they know it's fiction, and they know it's nonfiction, but they don't know whether it's women's mainstream or literary or commercial. So I think it's really important that the author know the genre.
So how would they find that? Like, let's say they've written a book and they want to say, well, what genre would this fit in? Do they make up the title, or is there like a certain...
No, well, I mean, if you go into a bookstore and look on the spines of books, you know, they'll say mystery or suspense or science fiction or whatever it is. But if they're writing women's mainstream fiction, they should know who those writers are. I mean, if you just Google it, or they attend conferences and go to the pitch sessions, and some conferences now even have a workshop on what category are you writing in. Seriously.
Yep.
So it's really important to know that. And then I think the second thing is that they should do their research on agents and find out who's representing what they're writing, and go to the agent's website, so that if you're writing science fiction, don't send that to an agent that's not representing science fiction. That happens more than you can possibly imagine.
Do you think that's out of desperation or just because of lack of investment?
Lack of investment. They don't do the research. You know, they'll just send out, you know, 200 queries.
Right.
And hope something's going to stick. And that's, you know, that's a huge mistake.
Right.
I mean, I get things all the time of material that I don't represent. And had they just gone to my website, they would have seen I don't represent science fiction.
Right.
I don't represent fantasy or future or espionage or, you know, things like that. So I suggest they research the agents, and then so that's the second thing. And then the third thing is I would make sure that their manuscript or proposal is in great shape to be sent out.
Okay.
And when they do send it out to the agent, that they're spelling the agent's name correctly. that they learn how to write a query letter. And there's so many wonderful books and research that you can come up with on writing queries. And don't put dear agent or dear sir or madam, those will be rejected immediately. Most agents won't even look at those.
It sounds like one of those emails you used to get, dear madam, I'm contacting you from the Bank of Zimbabwe.
Well, some of them are like that. And unfortunately, with the internet, anybody who has a thought in their head can send an email.
Right.
And they haven't done any research. Oh, and you'll get these crazy emails. You know, I had an idea for something. They can't back it up. They have no credentials. So learning how to write a query letter would be very, very important after you've got something in really, really good shape to send out. And I think that your question was, is the process, or something going on too long, or going off in the wrong direction, or...
Well, so somebody queries you and they say, okay, I've identified Angela. I really want her to be my agent. And I've written this book, Who Moved My Cheese, let's say.
Right.
So, you know, Dr. Spencer Johnson contacts you and you read his query and you say, yes, this works.
Right.
So then what happens after that? You write him back and say, I'd like to be your agent. How does that whole process work?
Well, usually what happens is, if you go to my website, you'll see I ask for the first 10 pages of a novel pasted in the email, and I can usually tell from those 10 pages whether it's something I want to read more of.
Right.
So if it is something, then I'll email right away and ask the first 100 pages or so and ask if it's a multiple submission and if other agents are considering at the same time. And if it's nonfiction, usually in the nonfiction queries, there's a lot in that letter about who the expert is, you know, why they're qualified to write the book. And if it's something I'm interested in, again, I'll respond right away and ask for the proposal. And then it goes, you know, it goes from there. If I like it and I think it's something that I can sell, then I'll talk with them about representation.
Okay, so let's say they say, Angela, you are the one. Let's make this happen.
Okay. Well, then there's conversation about if we're on the same page about how it should be pitched and who the audience is, and then I have an agency agreement, and that agency agreement has to be signed.
Right. If you're going to step out for someone, you want to make sure.
Yeah, no, it's really important because the agency agreement really spells out what the agent's attachment is to the project. And authors don't always realize that we are attached for the life of the project. And it's really important that you like the agent that you're working with because like and respect and trust because we are handling your money.
Right. Right. So you would then take the proposal.
Right.
You would present it to
editors. I usually, when I read something that I like,
yep,
I'm already making notes in the margins or on pieces of paper as to who I'll be sending it to.
Okay. So you have this Rolodex that just starts popping out names. You're like, oh, good for, you know, this would be great for Simon & Schuster or this would be great for Bantam or whatever, you know.
Right.
You're popping out the things and then in your mind you're figuring out how maybe to tweak it so that it's really appealing to whatever. Do you ever, if you pitch, do you ever pitch differently to different organizations?
No.
Okay.
No. I usually have a pitch letter that takes an awful lot of time to write because, you know, the interesting thing about a pitch letter is that editors sometimes read them and they in their mind, they're starting to think of book jacket copy. So sometimes the pitch letter can be used, the editors will see it as copy for a book.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So it's really important that that pitch letter be a good marketing piece.
Right. And it has to, I assume, has to have a unique angle on the market because there's many different...
You have to, you know, you have to spell it out and make it something that, you know, it has to be... A proposal has to be a business plan.
Mm-hmm.
Nonfiction proposal has to be a business plan for an editor.
Okay.
Everything has to be in there. The overview, the marketing credentials, the platform. And by the end of reading the proposal, I think the editor has to feel that their life has changed a little bit or they've learned something.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So you want to move them in the proposal to...
You want them to read the pitch letter and... be interested.
Okay.
And then in the nonfiction book proposal, you want them to see, get the big picture, how this can be published, who the audience is, excuse me, and why they should publish this book. I think those proposals that have that kind of urgency are the ones that sell.
I would imagine so, and I would imagine that, do you ever get in situations where several publishing houses are saying, hey, we want this?
Yeah, well, that's usually an auction, but that, more likely these days, auctions don't happen.
Okay.
It's more about either it's preempted where somebody buys it quickly and takes it off the market, or it's by the process of elimination.
All right, well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to find out more about what it takes to be an agent, and also from a writer's perspective, what you should be looking for when you're approaching an agent. So you are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemster with The Art of Potential Show, and we are having an absolutely fascinating conversation with Angela Rinaldi. She is a literary and extraordinary literary agent, represented just some amazing books out there, many of which we're familiar with, Who Moved My Cheese being one of the, I think, probably, is that, would you say that's your most popular one?
Oh, yeah. It sold like 8 million copies just in the United States and probably 40 million around the world.
That is amazing. What would you say are some of your other real popular books?
Zen Golf by Dr. Joseph Parent.
Yep.
I love nonfiction that's kind of the quirky within the obvious.
Uh-huh.
So just a regular golf book that has no kind of generic wouldn't interest me as much as the Buddhist meditation director who plays golf.
Right.
And that's what Zen Golf is. It's probably sold 250,000 copies.
Okay.
And I have a novelist, Drusilla Campbell, who's very, very popular. I do some wonderful parenting books, like Before Your Pregnancy. That's very, very popular. And The Thyroid Solution, several hundred thousand in print on that. And then there's the smaller things like Hitchhiking with Larry David, which is a great memoir.
And he's so funny. Like, I haven't had the chance to read that, but that looks very entertaining.
It is. It's surprisingly entertaining. And so my list is fairly eclectic.
Yeah.
I'm passionate about fiction. Nonfiction is, however, is easier to sell. And,
okay.
It pays the bills.
You know what? We all got to do what we got to do to pay the bills.
Well, exactly. But so I do a lot of nonfiction, but my fiction is passionate, and I'm doing more and more of it.
Oh, fun. So you're really starting, it sounds like, to enjoy that. Allowing yourself to enjoy it. You've always enjoyed it, but almost permitting yourself. So let's say that we have nonfiction and fiction writers in our community, which we do. As they go out into the world, what kind of questions should they be asking of agents? What should they, being proactive? And I think one thing to keep in mind is, you know, a lot of authors seek agents, so you can go out there and be as proactive as you want, but the agent has to agree to the relationship.
Right. Well, I think if I could go back to your original question about what it takes to be an agent.
Absolutely.
I can segue into this question because I think they're both interconnected. I think what it takes to be an agent is first you have to be an editor and a reader. I think it's important that you've been behind the desk acquiring.
Oh, interesting. And I bet not all agents have that experience.
Many do. Okay, many do.
Okay.
Many of us have publishing experience because editors use us as their first readers.
Yes.
It is incumbent upon us to kind of be searching out there for the best material and be their filter. So our reputation is based on the material that we send them. I mean, if we're just sending them anything, then they're really not going to pay attention to what we're sending. So it's important to have been an editor. I think it's important to have been an acquisitions editor, to have been in a publishing house where you go to publishing meetings and you have to stand up for a book, you know, where you have to tell a publishing committee why you should publish this book. And those same qualities go into being an agent. But you have to add to that patience, persistence, tenacity, negotiating skills, knowledge of the industry, a nurturer.
I was going to say, there's got to be something about ego soothing or...
Well, you have to be, you know, you just have to be an advocate. Advocacy on many levels includes hand-holding and motivating the writer to keep going when rejections come in because publishing is the business of rejection.
Right. And that's kind of, it sounds almost like a ruling out kind of thing.
Right, exactly. So you really want an agent who has all of those qualities.
So,
someone who knows the industry.
So, when an author is looking for an agent, the first thing they need to do is go onto the agent's website and to call through the agent's biography and make sure that I mean, I'm sure there are people who go out there and just hang a shingle and say, I'm a literary agent.
That happens all the time, and there's so many of them now.
And, you know, and you really, if, you know, you've got this amazing project, you really want to get someone with experience in your genre.
Right, exactly. I mean, you have to look at their website, see what they've sold, and how long they've been doing it. I think another question I'm sure will come up is, what would you tell people who want to be agents now?
And, yes.
And this kind of segue is connected to this previous discussion. I think you have to know that it's going to be a while before money comes in.
That's a really interesting thing, because who would, yeah, that's an important thing to know.
Right, exactly. And a lot of agents can't make it because they don't understand that when you sell something, you don't get all the money up front. And because advances are lower now than they used to be,
okay,
you're getting less money. The author is getting less money. So if you've gotten a $25,000 advance, you're getting paid in thirds. You're getting a third on signing, a third on delivery, acceptable delivery, and then maybe a third on publication. So there's not a strong income stream at first when you don't have a lot of authors that you're representing, and it takes time to build up a client list.
Wow.
I would, you know, anyone who's thinking of being an agent, you really have to have a roof over your head and the ability to pay your bills while you do this, because it's not going to pay your bills right away.
Well, and that brings up an interesting point, because I would think being an agent would also be a full-time job.
I mean, it is a full-time job, but yeah. you also want an agent who you know is in the game in terms of,
right,
you know, not who's going to be able to stay in there, and who isn't maybe forcing you to take a deal for a lot of money because they need it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It might not be the right publisher. It might not be the right editor. And because what can happen is there's a very huge advance in front of you, and what authors don't always realize is that that advance has to be earned out before you make any royalties. And if the book doesn't sell, and you're writing another book that's terrific, and it's the publisher's option book, and the first book hasn't sold, it's going to be difficult to get another contract.
Right.
So sometimes a huge advance can hold you back if the publisher is interested in your next book and the first book hasn't earned out.
Right, and so, and in some ways, to your point, you're hurting yourself.
There's a lot of factors in the equation.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And a lot of agents and authors might feel, well, look, let's take the best deal that we can get, and then we'll worry about it as it goes on.
Which, you know, it's human nature. Who wouldn't do that, you know?
But it's human nature.
Right, but someone with your experience is able to say, wait a minute, you know, let's strategize here. This may not be the best thing.
Right, exactly. I mean, there have been times when we took a lower offer because the publisher we were going with had higher production values, and they were going to do a book that had full color throughout instead of just an 8-page insert.
Mm-hmm. So you get a better quality, more purchasable book.
That was really important to us. Mm-hmm. That was a book called From Seed to Skillet. And even though we had other offers, we went with the publisher who really had a plan for how the book should look, because it was so important visually.
Yeah, it's a cookbooks are. That's what sells them.
So there are a lot of factors in the equation.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. All right, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about platforms, because I understand those are very important things.
Very important.
Yes, yeah. We want to learn about those. So you're listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. I'm talking with the wonderful literary agent, Angela Rinaldi. We are going to take a break, and we will be right back.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with literary agent Angela Rinaldi. So, Angela, we have just covered an amazing amount of ground here in this interview, and one of the things that I understand just from reading and such is that when you go out to sell a book, one of the main things you need to have done your homework on is a platform.
Mm-hmm.
Can you define a platform and tell us what it is?
Right, exactly. Okay, well, a platform is your outreach to the community, your media contacts, your website, your blog, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever you're doing to bring your name, your visibility to the public, that's your platform. So if you're an inspirational speaker and you have a date set up, that's part of your platform.
Okay.
If you have radio interviews or you can reach journalists or TV or whatever, that's part of your platform. Your platform is how people know you in the community and how you reach them.
Okay. So who you're influencing or who you're connected with or...
Well, that's part of it, but it's all about your ability to get media. That's
okay.
Your platform. That's what they want, is who has the biggest outreach into media.
Which is fascinating. So if you are let's say you're sitting in your kitchen and you're writing what you're sure is going to be the next best-selling book on widgets, we'll say.
Right.
And so you have to now create a platform or explain to a book publisher, you know, how you're going to reach your media, and you don't have a lot of media to start with. What's your advice for getting a platform going?
Well, for novelists, it's kind of different. I mean, they start getting some online visibility.
Okay.
And in literary journals and the online literary journals. But nonfiction, it's different. Website's really important.
Okay.
And social media skills, tweeting, Facebook, the whole thing.
Ugh.
I know. It's really daunting. And I give everybody a lot of credit who does that because it's another job.
And I'll just say my experience with Twitter is just that, wow, that's a lot to think about all the time. It's interesting that Twitter is such a big platform shower because tweeting is just it's like for people who do it, it almost seems like they eat, live, and breathe it. It's just part of their, habitual activities, whereas for those who are not habitual with it. It's...
Right, exactly. And, there are a lot of good reference sources online and a lot of good literary websites where you can go and you can get all this information on platforms. And there are books like How to Write a Book Proposal by Michael Larson that explain all of this.
Mm-hmm. And that he goes into, okay, so...
All of it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, How to Write a Book Proposal by Michael Larson. Okay.
Exactly. I mean, if you're giving TED Talks, that's a fabulous platform.
Okay.
And a lot of book deals come from those TED people.
Oh, terrific. Terrific. Oh, that's good to know. And I know around Chapel Hill we've had a few different of the TED. I mean, they're kind of branched out TED Talks. And I know Duke has had quite a few as well.
Right.
So that's a great place for people to kind of plug in.
Right. I represent Catherine Woodward Thomas, who's written Calling in the One.
Yep.
And it's a book on the laws of attraction. And she does online telemarketing seminars, and they're a huge success. So that's part of her platform.
All right. So I don't know what an online telemarketing seminar is.
Well, it's telemarketing. In other words, she gives seminars online.
Okay.
Webinars, or I think is another term for them. And,
yep.
And people tune in at a certain time. They get online, and they're all talking on a... in an online course on how to attract the love of your life.
And so all these people then become her following or whatnot. So when she writes the book, they're out there saying, we want a copy of it.
And they buy it,
And then the publisher smiles and you smile.
Right, exactly.
She smiles.
That's part of her. She's built that wonderful marketing platform.
And so she, it sounds like in her case, she built the platform long before the book came about.
Well, she didn't. We sold this book maybe 10 years ago, and it was before platforms were important. And she did not have a platform. And it would have been, you know, if we were trying to sell it now, it would have been hard. I'd say it's only been in the last 4 or 5 years that he worked with a marketing company called Evolving Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done, you know, together, they've done a wonderful job of these telemarketing seminars, of these, you know, these seminars online. I don't want to say telemarketing because that sounds like something else, but they have online seminars and hundreds, thousands of women get online to participate.
Oh, how fantastic. That's a great, I mean, that's just a great way to go. It's interesting, though, and that's why I wonder about the people who are sitting at their kitchen table writing the book who don't have a platform, because to your point, 5 years ago, it was a very different world. There was no Twitter.
Right.
Facebook was pretty new.
Right. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't exceptions.
Right.
And that someone without a platform won't get their book sold. Those exceptions do happen.
Okay.
But for the most part, editors are looking for brands. They're looking for authors with platforms.
Very interesting. So it's kind of like editors want a ready-made audience. It's almost like they agree to do the book if you can agree to give them an audience to sell it to.
That's exactly right. And they're going to be relying on you to do 90% of the marketing.
Which is, I would think people would naturally want to do that. I would not think that everyone would naturally be good at that.
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's a very good point, Kristen. And that's where all these, you can go online and there's all kinds of companies that will coach and
right.
tell you how to do these things. Or you can go to conferences and take courses.
Well, and actually, I want to talk real quick about conferences while we have a few more minutes. A lot of, you know, we have the North Carolina Writers Association here in North Carolina, which is just wonderful, and all kinds of writing groups. Do agents go to a lot of these conferences to find folks?
Yes. Or,
okay. So if you are a writer out there right now, what advice would you give someone to go out and find an agent? Like, how would you tell them to do that?
Well, it's as I mentioned before, first have something that's in really good shape.
Right.
If you've written a novel, make sure it's finished. I don't like to read things that aren't finished.
Okay.
If it's finished, I know the writer has the stamina to do it.
Okay.
First of all.
Right.
And make sure that it's finished. Make sure that it's in good shape. Make sure that you've done your research. Make sure that you have a great query letter. I mean, those are three very simple things.
So talk to me. Well, actually, what I want to do, tell me one quick thing about conferences and are there any good ones to go to? And then I want you to tell folks how they can reach out to you, because I'm sure a lot of people are interested in.
Okay. Well, there are two different kinds of conferences. There are the writing conferences, you know, like Iowa Writers Workshop, where you have to be accepted. Those are very, very serious.
Right.
And then there are the big marketing conferences where there are 20 agents. And maybe 10 agents and all kinds of courses.
Right.
And then there's just what are known as the pitch slams, where there's 30 agents in a room and you wait online to pitch your book. There's hundreds of writers that go to there. I think Writer's Digest sponsors some and quite a few others do that. So those are three types of writers' conferences. All have their value, okay?
Right.
And the best way to reach out to me is to go to my website. It's rinaldiliterary.com and send an email. Look and see what I'm representing and what I'm interested in representing.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a link to Angela's website on the Art of Potential's website. So if you let me spell hers for you. It's RINALDILITERAR. Y.com, so right. Rinaldi.com.
Right.
And then if you forget that, you can always go to the Art of Potential and you can link through to it that way.
Okay.
So people can do it that way. Angela, you have been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for your time and filling us in on how to make this process happen.
Thanks so much, Kristen.
Thank you. Take care. You've just listened to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.